Our show is supported by Be My Guest with Ina Garten, Ina's official podcast from Food Network, back for its fourth season. On every episode, Ina invites a different friend to her home in the Hamptons to talk about life, love, and career, all while cooking up an amazing meal. Join Ina as she crafts a classic cocktail with journalist Frank Bruni and discusses the ins and outs of Yorkshire pudding with actress Emily Mortimer. If you're looking for great conversations about and over good food, tune in to Be My Guest with Ina Garten. Listen to Be My Guest with Ina Garten wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb. In this bonus episode, we're bringing you contributor Shauna Seaver's extended interview with author Shane Mitchell about her far-reaching explorations in writing her book Far Afield. We couldn't fit the entire interview into the show, but we thought you'd enjoy hearing more of Shane's adventures. Journalist Shane Mitchell has toured the globe, filing reports for magazines like Saveur and Travel and Leisure. Her food stories from remote places have inspired her to take a closer look, not just at what people eat around the world, but how they share it with each other. Shane's book Far Afield is the result of more than 10 years of stories and is a stunning look at the meaning of hospitality around the world. Our contributor, Shauna Seaver, found out more.
Hi, Shane. Thanks so much for talking with us.
It's a pleasure.
Well, I have to say that the book is really stunning. I mean, just the look of it and the scope and the depth is really impressive. And the focus is food, but also hospitality. So I'm curious to know, what is it about that connection or what you had seen in these different parts of the world that made you feel like there was a book there to be written?
Well, hospitality is a universal construct. It plays out in many different ways through multiple cultures, but it's something that we all have a respect for. In fact, the definition of hospitality is the kind and generous reception of guests or strangers. And in my case, a lot of people welcome me to the table. And so the book is sort of an expression of that welcome in many, many communities.
In the introduction, you describe yourself and the audience for the book as having an appetite for the map's void spaces, which I love. And it perfectly describes just how far-flung the locations in this book are. You visit 10 very remote, very different parts of the world on nearly every continent. And I'm curious to know, was there any sort of driving thought that sort of propelled you through the process of making this book?
Yes, actually. There's an African proverb that is one of my favorites, and I think it's poignant. If I may, I think you might enjoy it too. It is, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together.
That is beautiful. Now, how did you set about the journey and deciding where to go?
What I was looking at really is places that still have a connection to their culture and their landscape and how that plays out in some of the more remote parts of the world. I personally am drawn to remote places. I live in a remote place. So for me, these are places where I feel comfortable. And it's just a question of finding places like that in the world that still have that relationship with the land and being connected to it. So, for instance, the places that I found that were like that were Iceland, Australia, Africa, South America. And that's where I decided to go.
And you didn't go alone. You traveled with photographer James Fisher. He filled this book with so many gorgeous, arresting images. And I'd love to hear about your process for working together, especially in so many unusual locations and dealing with language barriers and that sort of thing.
Well, I met James on an assignment. This is going back about 9 or 10 years ago in Australia, which is where he's from. He's actually a very well-known stills photographer. He works for Hollywood. But James also has a love of adventure. And when I met him, we were in the outback in the Northern Territories of Australia. We were with a group of Aborigine foragers. And I was trying to do a story on Dreamtime painting. And he drove me all over the roughest parts of the outback. So we immediately realized we kind of loved the same kind of places. So I told him, listen, anytime you're interested in bumping around in the back of a Jeep and puking your brains out and going down dark alleys and risking your life to find good food, would you come with me? And he basically said, oh, yeah, absolutely. So that's how we got started.
And that spirit really drives the book the whole way through. And food, as you mentioned, is the star here. And it's the strongest bridge between every human being. We know that. It's sort of the ultimate inclusive conversation, right? So I was curious that if having that as your motivation, this conversation about food, if it helped to sort of conquer any fears you may have had or resistance that you may have encountered along the way.
Well, that's a great question. For me, I think food is a gateway into culture. Everyone eats, and most people are pretty generous about sharing, especially when it comes to food. So I have found over the years that I can walk in to almost any community and ask people along the way, what are you having for dinner? And by and large, it's just a very soft entry point. And they will say, oh, my goodness, my grandmother is cooking this stew that's only in this village. Please come and sit with us and enjoy it, and we'll tell you the story of it. And that's your entry in to how a community sustains itself, both literally and sort of spiritually.
Let's talk about the chapter when you visited Calais in northern France and your time you spent in this area you called the jungle. Can you please tell us about that?
We're all pretty aware right now of the refugee crisis. Mm-hmm. And it was starting to really reach critical mass over a year ago in Europe. It wasn't really being reported much here in the U.S. But James Fisher, the photographer, is based in London now, and he and I were actually originally going to do a chapter on an elderly couple in the mountains north of Sarajevo. They are Bosnian, and during the Bosnian War, they actually were sheltering Muslims on their farm who were being persecuted. And it just seemed like a lovely story. It's a love letter to this couple. And James and I were going to go film them for the book. And he disappeared on me. I didn't know where he was for months. And he wasn't answering his phone. And he wasn't answering texts or emails. I was like, where are you? And he surfaced one day and said, look, I'm really sorry. I know we were supposed to go to Bosnia, but I'm here in northern France with this group of refugees, and it's a really terrible situation. Get on a plane. You've got to come here. And that's how I wound up in Calais, which is in northern France, which is where the channel between England and France exits on the French side. And there was a huge camp that had developed on a toxic landfill of refugees from all over the crisis area who had wound up here, and they were desperately trying to get to the UK for asylum.
Your guide in this chapter, if I can call him that, his name is Hamada. I loved the story of you going to the supermarket with him. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Oh, gosh, yes. Okay, so Hamada is Sudanese. He is a young man from a region that's been in great conflict. So he left and made his way through Libya and got to Italy, and then ultimately wound up in Calais, which is where we met him. The Sudanese community is really interesting because they are really accustomed to working together and sharing meals. And just communal sharing is an important aspect of Sudanese culture. So the second day I was there, they said, why don't we cook for you and celebrate you being here? So I said, okay, I'll tell you what, I'll go to the grocery store and get the food. Just let me know what you need. And so Hamada and I drove to the local version of what they call a hypermarché, which is the French equivalent of a Costco. So Hamada and I are wandering through this huge supermarket. You know, my French is mediocre. His French is non-existent. He speaks pretty good English. I speak no Arabic. Well, except for please and thank you. But we're wandering through looking for the ingredients for a particular dish that they want to cook, which is called mala rope, which is a type of yogurt and lamb stew. But we're wandering around the supermarket, and Hamada says, we need this type of bean. We can't find what he wants. He's just like, I know it when I'll see it. And he said, if we don't get it, it's okay. You know, he was just so accommodating. I said, all right. So we didn't find the beans. And we're pushing our cart towards the checkout, and we just randomly go through the aisle where all the jams and jellies are kept. And he stops dead in the aisle, and he points, and he says, that's it, that's it, that's the bean. And I'm looking at where he's pointing, and what it is a jar of Skippy peanut butter. And we bought it.
I love that. I love it. We all know that recipe that works with you need the one particular thing. And it's such an iconic sort of product, especially for us in America, and for the two of you to have that moment of connection over something so simple. I think for me really defined what this whole book is about. And given everything that's happening in our world right now and your choice to connect with refugees on this level, it was very powerful. And I wanted you to talk a little bit about their commitment to keeping their food traditions and sense of hospitality alive despite their circumstances.
Well, for me, this chapter was very poignant. It was a very difficult place. It was traumatic to see people living in this sort of condition and in this sort of heightened anxiety and desperation. And yet their sense of hospitality was so poignant to see, even though they had, you know, the smallest amounts of food and the simplest, they were still so welcoming, and they still wanted to even just offer a cup of tea. And I think what was really important for me was to emphasize that these are the people who were far afield at that point, not me. These were people who had fled their homes, had left war and persecution and terror behind, and almost with nothing but the clothes on their back, their children in their arms, and yet they wound up here and were so open to me and so generous to me. And for me, that's the personification of hospitality. What I asked them was, what is it that you remember from home? What is it that you can take from home that makes you feel better on this journey? And by and large, what most people replied was memories of their food from home, which is why the Sudanese were cooking me the dishes that they remember from home, that they used to celebrate guests. So I think that's pretty much what was important to me about that chapter and what it says about people who are displaced, who have had all sorts of difficulties, and yet can still welcome you into their hearts and open doors to you.
Shane, thank you so much for talking with us.
Shauna, thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Shane Mitchell is the author of Far Afield, Rare Food Encounters from Around the World. Shauna Seaver's latest book is Real Sweet. We have a recipe for mola robe, that Sudanese lamb and yogurt stew from Shane's book, and you can find it at splendidtable.org.
I'm Tanya Mosley. In 1987, my sister Anita vanished without a trace. Decades later, thanks to DNA, we found her. But that's only the beginning of the story. She Has a Name is a new audio documentary that explores the search for redemption, confronting trauma, and healing in the face of unimaginable loss. Subscribe now to Truth Be Told Presents She Has a Name, where every revelation brings us closer to the truth.